And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. This is Martin Willis, host of Podcast UFO, and I'm live in the great state of Maine right now. We have some guests coming up. We have Audrey Starborn, we have Dan Brew, and we have Steve Mitchell, and we are in a little office in downtown Portland. We're going to do round robin, but I'm going to talk about the alien slides that were released down in Mexico City, and everyone was looking forward to it. I think you and I may have had a couple of conversations in the past, and ta-da, it happened, and I saw the picture this morning, and I don't like it. I think it's, I'm just surprised that so many people stood behind it and all that. And to me, if it was something that was supposed to be a fresh picture in 1947, why is it so caved in and mummified looking? Anyway, you and I have not talked about this at all. So I wanted to hear what you had to say about it.
Well, it's obviously an alien, so I've been researching what type of alien that it might be. No, you're right. I think, you know, I interviewed Adam Dew, one of the researchers, one of the main researchers, a few months ago about this. Once, you know, they announced everything, and once people kind of had discovered, you know, this image, you and I had talked about it, that was less blurry of the slide, and people came up with this mummy theory. And you know, seeing the real picture, even then, you know, Adam Dew said, wait till you see the real picture. I don't think it's a mummy. Jaime Musan, you know, had contacted us. He's like, oh, that's definitely not the complete slide. Wait till you see it. You'll see, obviously, it's not a mummy. I think a lot of people, now that they've seen the slide, because, as you said, it's called the Roswell slides because there were supposed to be two, but for some reason they didn't display them both. They just displayed one. And it just further solidifies, I think, in a lot of people's minds that it's definitely a mummy. And I think a lot of people are kind of like, well, it's obvious. This is in a museum. How could you guys think otherwise? You know, John Greenwald wrote a great story from the Black Vault about all of this, and he points out that you can see some other artifacts on this display.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
One of them looks like even an ape or a gorilla head or something like this. And then you can see, you know, and we had talked about this even with the blurry one, you could see a person on the other side. It looks like a woman in a skirt. And interesting enough, you know, when I spoke with Adam Dew, he talked about how there were some other pictures they found in this set that they were looking to get more information on. One of those pictures, and they have a couple of them posted at his website, which is Slidebox Media, and one of those pictures is a woman at a museum that's wearing a dark blue skirt. It could even be the same woman. So, you know, I'm putting together my story on that, and I'm including it. So, yeah, I mean, it really looks like it's something in a museum. There's a researcher out there, Isaac Coy, and people have been posting online a picture that he put up of a child mummy from Thebes. And I've talked to him about that today. He got the picture from a guy named David Hunt. I looked up David Hunt, and I found a paper that he wrote about this mummy. So this mummy was discovered in 1856. It was then transferred to a museum in, I think, Philadelphia up until 1957. So it's entirely possible that the slide is from 1947, and it's just, you know, this family going to visit, or this couple going to visit this museum and taking a picture of this mummy. And the reason why we, you know, people argue, well, if it was a mummy, we'd be able to find that display. Well, since 1956, it was moved to the Smithsonian, and that's where David Hunt had written a story about, he's a physical anthropologist, about this mummy and some research they did with this mummy, which I guess can now be seen in the Smithsonian. And it really does. I mean, I think that the resemblance is striking.
Okay, let's talk about something else. Mm-hmm. Here I am, Joe Schmo, and I hear about this. Thank you. So I hear about this unveiling of the slides, and I'm all excited, like, wow, I'm going to hop on board this plane. I'm going to go to Mexico City and to see this. Mm-hmm. What kind of cash am I laying out for this? Do you have any idea what that part of it was?
You know what? I've heard conflicting stories. I mean, certainly a plane flight to Mexico City is going to cost you probably about $1,000. It's going to cost you, you know, some money to stay at a hotel. So it's not going to be a cheap trip. And I think it comes down to this. The Daily Record wrote about a quote that they took from actually my interview with Adam Duke, where he said that, you know, other news agencies had wanted to interview him, but he didn't want to talk to them because they weren't offering any compensation. And so a lot of people feel that way, that all they were doing was out for money. Now, what I'm including in my story, because, you know, I'm a softie, is that Adam Duke did try to justify that by saying, you know, I've spent a lot of money on this, and I'd like to tell my wife that at least we've broken even. I'm sure a lot of us in this field can sympathize, where we're spending so much money to do research and all these other things in this field, but often our spouses are not as thrilled about the topic. So that was his argument. You know, then they said, well, why Mexico? Why does it have to be, you know, all of this money and all of this big fanfare? Granted, I agree, it's not the most professional or credible way to do something like that. But it's according to, in the same Daily Record story, Jaime Musan, he said he lost $100,000 in this whole thing. And that may be true. The auditorium wasn't full. People had reported it was about 40% full. And I think, you know, once that blurry image came out that looked so much like a mummy, a lot of the momentum kind of went out of the whole thing, so people weren't as excited about it. But all I could say is, you know, at least we don't have evidence that this thing is an alien. I think a lot of people feel it's most likely a mummy. At the same time, I'm not so sure we have ample evidence that these guys tried to hoax. I know especially Don Schmidt very well. I don't think that he would, you know, try to hoax people, especially to get money.
I think he was totally. I think he was totally sold on the idea.
I think you're right. I think he was sold. I think Tom Carey was sold. From what I understand, Tom Carey and Don Schmidt did not make any of these profits. And I think I feel like, I don't know Adam Du as well, but I feel like in the interviews he was very forthcoming. I mean, I asked him, do you think this is a mummy? He said, I looked into it, but I don't think it looks like a mummy personally. Maybe it is. So I think he was being honest. I asked him, did you talk to scientists about this? And he said, I did, but whenever you show a scientist or an anthropologist a picture of a humanoid that has a head, two arms, and two legs, they're immediately going to say it's human. Well, that's a professional opinion. Of course, Jaime had a couple of supposed experts there that said they didn't think it was human, but so you have expert versus expert here. But I think a lot of people feel like, I don't need an expert, and you may feel this way. I don't need an expert to tell me, well, and to be honest, I feel that way. I don't need an expert to tell me that this is a mummy.
Yeah, well, you know, if this was thought out properly, in my opinion, it would be to get like an anthropologist and like a team of people to really look at it and have everything to display at once. Well, here's our findings, you know, I mean, if it came out good, that is. Then do the event, if it came out positive. Do the event, set it up, present everything, you know, the whole spiel. Instead of, I truly think, and this sounds cold, but I think it was a money event or intended to be a money event, a cash out by some, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm often an apologist, and I feel that way in this case. because I know some of these guys, and I hope that's not the case, but it could be. I can't say for certain. But one thing Adam Dew told me is, you know, that there was a credible scientific magazine that was going to do a story. They were going to do a lot of science, and he told them no because they weren't offering money. And he said, I don't know if I did the right thing. What do you think? And I told him, frankly, you didn't do the right thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the research is more important than you getting your money out, in my opinion, and it would have been better to go with them and find out what it really is to get some science done, because now we've got all this fanfare. Now we've got all this negative press, because overwhelmingly people are pretty upset about this whole thing, including the media. They even include this Daily Record put "Fail Epic" in the title, or "Epic Fail."
I saw that
in the title. But I think that would have been better, because now I don't know. I think now the public opinion has kind of made up their mind, and I don't think there would be anybody that would be willing to go forward with it, looking at it.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a step backwards. And, you know, someone just put on the message board a minute ago, you know, it's unworthy of discussion, you know, and it sort of is, but it's like the elephant in the living room. We have to talk about it. Everybody's talking about it. But it also, I really think, puts a negative spin. You know, I mean, I was contacted by a few people that aren't into the subject at all. And they're, you know, chiming in, you know, funny jokes like, yeah, it looks like me after I drank too much tequila, or, you know, something like that. But anyway, I think it is unfortunate. And it kind of makes you say, well, here it goes again. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's like someone added water to the Atacama baby, you know?
Atacama was the number one of these situations. And I think there was a little bit more deception in the Atacama situation than this one that personally made me concerned. However, what I would say to, you know, the person who said this is unworthy of discussion, it kind of goes back to your hypothetical Joe. You and I talked about this slide earlier. We talked about the fuzzy picture and our feelings about the fuzzy picture. We, along with other researchers, have been covering information on this. So, you know, to hypothetical Joe out there, you should have heeded our warnings, because, you know, we have been warning, and a lot of people have been warning. And it's important for us to get that information out to Joe. So, in other words, you know, we've got to get out the good, the bad, and the ugly regarding this field to the public. It is what it is, and hopefully it will help people avoid falling in the pitfalls of spending money or getting duped.
That's right. So if you're listening live, we're live right now, you can jump in the chat room at podcastufo.com. Alejandro, thanks so much for, you know, helping out, and we're not going to do the regular news, of course. And is it next week that you're going to be gone? I'm so confused.
Next week, I will be on the high seas in the Gulf of Mexico. So, yeah, so I'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
And I'll be in some hotel somewhere in the country, so doing a live show. I sure hope I'm...
I won't ask about the details there.
no details. It's not like your Vegas trip that we're not talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Hey. Don't talk about that.
Right. You already paid me for that. All right, man. So thanks a lot. So that's it. And it's time to bring in our guests. Thanks, Alejandro. And I'll be talking to you next week.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
You bet. About a month or so ago, I decided to post an ad on the Facebook page in Maine, the state of Maine, for people that belong to a UFO group. And I said, hey, you know, I run shows right in Portland, Maine. Why don't you come to, and right near Portland, that is. But I have a studio available right in downtown Portland, Maine, and asked some people to come in. And here they are. Find a seat, people. So we have Steve Mitchell.
Eric.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Eric. I know a Steve Mitchell, and that's why I did. We have an Eric Mitchell, and I'm sorry. And we have Dan Brew, and we have Audrey Starborn. And Audrey, we'll start with you, ladies, first.
Okay.
You run the Experiencers Speak
This one?
Yep.
Okay.
And just make sure you hold it.
Okay. It's on.
You run
okay.
the Experiencer Speak each year here, right?
Yes,
right nearby.
Experiencer Speak, yeah. It's coming up in August. This year it's at the Fireside Inn on Riverside Avenue.
And what's the date of that?
August 28th and 29th. 28th, the Friday, we have a big banquet scheduled where we're going to have three speakers that night. I believe it's Tom Reed, Kathy Martin, and I can't remember who else is on the schedule for that night. You can go to starbornsupport.com and then hit the events page, conference page, and all the details are there. We also have an Experiencer Speak website, which is www.experiencerspeak.yolasite.com.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I have to. It's funny when I do these shows, I have a chat room going, communicating with the producer and everything.
Multitasking.
So your sister's involved in this too.
Yes, yes, I'm gonna.
And you've been in a couple of documentaries, and at least one I've seen you in. And can you just kind of go over quickly your experience? We're going to go round robin here, just for the people coming in here. And also, again, if you want to jump in the chat room, it's podcastufo.com. You can pose a question. We're going round robin, and we're starting right now with Audrey Starborn. So basically. Give us your background.
All right. Well, I'm an identical twin. I'm a lifelong experiencer, alien abductee, whatever you want to call it. I've had these beings in my life all of my life. Throughout the years, it was very confusing. We didn't know what was going on, my sister and I. There was really, you know, we didn't have influence. We grew up in Athens, Ohio. Had a TV, but I think we watched Tom and Jerry on Saturdays, and that was basically it. So for the rest of the time, we were outside, you know, playing and you know, doing our thing together. And so we weren't, you know, into the sci-fi. Like people say, oh, watch too many movies. No, that wasn't the case. We did keep journals. We drew pictures of what we know today to be the gray aliens.
When did you start journaling?
Probably 7, 8 years old, we started drawing pictures. We were always into art and stuff, so we decided to draw pictures of the things that we would see and the beings that would come into our room that we would call the bald men as kids. We would be scared to go to bed and, you know, freak out and say the bald men are coming. And, of course, my parents, you know, would say, oh, there's no such thing, and tuck us in. And we were always together, which we were lucky. Most people go through it alone. One day my mom, you know, found our journals and was looking through it and just thought, oh, wow, they've got active imaginations. This is really cool stuff. But, you know, later on in the 80s, she was in the grocery store and sitting on the shelf was Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, and she saw the same face that we drew in our journals. Hmm. So she put two and two together before we did.
Really?
Yes.
And now, was there anyone else in the family that you recall that talked about this? Any type of experiences?
Well, you know, not at the time, but now, you know, as we've come forward and started to be a little more open, you know, my mother has come forward, and she's had recent experiences even. And, you know, through the research that we do, we understand that it goes back through generations. So, you know, there's probably quite a few cousins and other family members, you know, that we're just not aware of. People don't like to talk about it. You know, it's one of those taboo subjects, and we're really trying to break that with, you know, having it be more mainstream and accepted, as well as just showing the numbers of how many people we work with. I mean, I started the group in 2006 after being asked to do it by these beings. So I really, you know, just said, okay, you know, what am I going to say? No. So I did it. And so far to date, I'd say we've worked with over 2,500 experiencers from all across the world. And, you know, working in this field, I know other people that do this as well, and they've got the numbers. So, you know, people just keep coming forward all the time. And it's important, you know, for the world and the individual experiencer. And that's why we do this conference. You know, it's all about the experiencer. It's about educating, you know, the public as well as, you know, helping other experiencers. You know, every year there'll be somebody that comes up and thanks me for, you know, giving him an understanding about what his wife is going through, or what her husband, you know, the other spouse, who really didn't know what to do. But just through these conferences and meetings and the shows, you know, we've done the Secret History of UFOs on Nat Geo, and Alien Encounters, and Monsters and Mysteries in America, just talking about it. And that's enough to be in somebody's living room and have somebody say, wait a minute, you know, that's very similar to what I've been through. And then, you know, they'll reach out and get more understanding. We run support groups as well, monthly, in several different states. And we're also in the UK now, in Latin America. So.
Wow. Now, how do you, I don't want to say defend yourself, but how do you handle this if someone just point blank says, oh, you're crazy, you're all crazy? What do you say to that?
You know, I feel bad for them, you know, and it's not about making them believe and forcing them to. It's about giving them enough information so, you know, if somewhere down the line, which is going to happen, disclosure will happen, and what we've told them will always be in their mind. Whether they consider us crazy now at the time, it doesn't matter to me. I know it's real. I've seen them, I've talked to them, I've felt them, I've smelled them. It is real, and they have been here for a very long time. And, you know, there's many, many people that go through this. So just to give them enough information to make them think I'm crazy is enough for them to remember when they realize I'm not crazy. So.
Mm-hmm. I can only picture if this would have happened to myself. That's all I can mm-hmm. do.
Yeah.
And if it would, I would be so, I think, unless I don't understand, I would be so scared and petrified.
Oh, yeah.
I'd want to talk to everybody in the world, mm-hmm. like, this is happening. It's got to stop. You know, how are so many people I've talked to that go through this so composed and
well, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. And, you know, the main thing that I, when I work with people, is working on that fear. Where they're completely telepathic beings, that doesn't mean, you know, they just read your thoughts. They feel your emotions. They feel everything. And so negative thought and fear actually, you know, affects them in a bad way. Now, there's different species as well. So, you know, not all of them are, you know, little gray bald beings. They're very, you know, human-like beings that are easier on the human mind and psyche to relate to and not to fear. But, you know, and, you know, the people say that they're so evil and, you know, they're just coming in and they've got no right to do this. But if they were that evil, why would they tuck us back into bed? And why would they remove or make us forget about the majority of the things that would harm the human mind? You know, the psyche is very delicate. So a lot of people just are put into that state. I don't know what they do, hypnosis. But in seconds, you know, you can forget everything and just have that fading memory of they came. I remember that. But everything else is laying dormant in us. You know, I've been on a classroom setting in a spaceship, and we're there, and I'm with other what appear to be humans, and we're being taught all this important information. And I, you know, they let me remember the answer to a question I asked, and that question was, why, what's the point of teaching us all of this if only to be forgotten when we're returned? And what they said to me was, everything that you need to know will be dormant in your mind and will activate when the time is right. So the so-called junk area, or the, you know, unused area of the human brain, which is what, probably 90%, is acting as storage for experiencers. So we've got a lot of information in there. And, you know, there's times where we're activated. Some people call it downloading. But the activations do happen, and especially when we're together, there'll be different triggers. And when we trigger each other, the memories will start to activate and be put together. So it's important stuff, really important stuff, and people really need to pay attention to this because there is something going on on a universal scale. It's not just here. The main thing is that this planet is not going to be allowed to be destroyed by the human race. So, you know, that it's time to make a change because the planet Earth is very, very sick and very threatened right now. So they're you know, they're watching very carefully, and I think they always have.
Well, okay, we have a ton of questions coming in on the message board. And let's see, I'll try to go back. First of all, and we want to give everyone a chance here, and we got plenty of time to do that, because I don't know if you know this. Did you know it was 2 hours?
I was hoping it was, because one's never enough.
Yeah, okay. All right. So next we're going to be talking to Dan Brew. He's we met, actually, I think through Facebook originally. But anyway, the person wants to know, what did they say to you? Is it just many, many things?
Oh, yeah. They say many things. But let me see. When they came to me in 2006, this is after a near-death experience. The story, I mean, like I said, 2 hours is barely scratching the surface. But let's just say I ran for years in fear. I finally, in the 90s, did find someone to help me. We ran into a man in a club one night that we were introduced to on a StarCraft 10 years before. He's now our scientist. His name is Matt Moniz. He was also featured in Monsters and Mysteries. He was able to direct us in a way where we could find help. We did find someone who did hypnosis very quickly. It really just opened up this box and scared me even more. But after my near-death experience, in which I was actually saved by one of the human-like beings or angelic beings, that's, you know, who they are, I came out a new person. After a series of events and awakening, as I like to call it, my spiritual awakening, when I started to get the visions and the messages, I moved here to Maine. And in November 5th of 2006, a being came to me, and she was one of the human-like beings. They have a glow about them, which, you know, is much like the halos that are portrayed in various religious art. She said, you need to start a group and call it Starborn Support. She said, someday the world would know who you are. You would help many, and all involved would become like ambassadors for the planet. So, of course, I woke up the next day and said, I don't know what she's talking about or what to do, but what am I going to say? No. You know, am I going to say no? No. So I went and I just started a MySpace page and a phone number and walked away. I said, I did it. And then it just became what it is today from there. And very rapidly, things started to happen. And, you know, they did come back to me in 2012 and, you know, showed me what to do with Experiencers Speak, which I had never even been to a UFO conference. I had no idea what I was doing. No idea how much work was involved, but I threw it together in 4 months, the first one, which we held in Gorham. And, I mean, what could go wrong did, including the venue closing a week before the event after being heavily advertised. So I had to literally knock on doors in the neighbor's church and say, you know, can I do this? So, you know, it's important that, you know, I not only do what they ask, but I, you know, I focus on it and I don't go at it as a, you know, I'm going to do this with ego or I'm going to do this. It's, you know, it's going to make everything important. No, you know, I don't even speak at my own conferences. I stand in the background because it's not about me. And, you know, the information that they give us, like I said, does remain dormant. We don't get all the answers either. Every one of us is programmed with a little piece of it. And like I said before, when we come together and certain people are supposed to meet and we are, you know, brought together in various ways, it's pretty amazing, actually, to see it happen. And then, you know, say one person has a piece of a message that doesn't make sense. And you meet another person, and the rest of it, you get triggered by that person, and then you put the pieces together. So the messages come out making more sense. There's just so much information, you know, for a show like this to even begin. But basically, the world is in trouble, and it needs to be healed. And the way of the world right now is it's going to self-destruct. They're not going to let humans destroy it. You know, we do have the technology and understanding of how to work with free energy and things. But, of course, the big oil corporations don't want that to happen. And that's just a piece of it, you know. So I guess when truth happens, it's going to be a total paradigm shift for everyone. And it has to, you know, and for years we've all known, you know, this is not good, you know, yet, you know, today I'm walking through the woods and there's just trash everywhere. I mean, why would people do that? I don't understand. So I picked it up and, you know, now it's in my car. So, but at the same time, there was no trash barrels, you know, but people, you know, they just don't think. And when you tell people that you've, you know, we've got to stop doing this, what can one person do? One person can do a lot. You know, if every one person did it. So it is about, you know, just becoming more aware of where you are and how important it is to be here and to coexist is very important and not, you know, thrive off greed and ego and competition. This isn't a competition. And, you know, when I had my near-death experience I died, basically I was out of my body in the rip current. I wasn't thinking about, you know, the car and the garage or my material things. I was thinking about the loved ones and, you know, the connections I had and how they were going to feel and how I never got a chance to, you know, tell this one that. And my sister and I were kind of, you know, had a falling out. And that's what goes through your mind. It's not what you have materialistically. It's the things that are important are in your heart. And people need to get back to that connection with one another.
Okay, so we had a whole bunch of questions coming. I have to scroll up. And I do want other people to talk, so
yeah.
I want to make sure. Let me just ask a couple of sample ones. I'm just going to throw a few of them at, and then just if you can quickly answer them, just so we can have some
sure.
other people talk.
And I'm also on Facebook, Audrey Starborn, so people can message me if
okay.
they need to.
First of all, they want to know, I'm going to ask these one right after the
okay.
other. Do you have a counseling background? If she has seen so many, where's the proof? Shouldn't they have some sort of artifacts or pictures or something? Another question is, are you and your sister Rh negative blood type? Another one, why did they choose you? And we'll just,
well, yeah, right, yes on the blood type. As far as proof, I don't feel like I'm required to present proof because it's not about that. What I, you know, do say is, you know, people that go into church every day and they kneel and stand and get up and sit down and, you know, stand in line and do their ritualistic routines, I want to know, you know, do they have proof before they go there? The proof is, you know, my whole entire life and my understanding of things. And, you know, it's been happening to me for a very long time, 42 years. So, you know, proof, I don't feel like I'm required to. But, yes, I have many scoop marks and implants and things like that. Do I want to, you know, show the world and pull one out? No, I don't. It's more important than, you know, just the black and white. You know, like I'm not going to go find a mummy and, you know, try to bring that as proof. It's the proof will come in time. And actually, most people don't even spend any time anymore looking up in the sky because they're glued to their TVs and iPhones and things. So all they need to do is go to a place without light pollution and they can get their own proof if they just concentrate and ask for it.
She says you are required to prove your claim. But
I'm required by who?
Anyway, it's just a comment. Dan, welcome, Dan.
Okay.
We'll get back to you. This is round robin. Welcome, Dan. You and I met Facebook group in Maine. I was just on Facebook one day, and I said, I wonder if there's anything going on in Maine. And sure enough, do you admin that page?
I do.
So you started that page.
I did. I started about a year and a half ago as a way to meet and reach like-minded people. And I was kind of surprised that there wasn't more of a presence in Portland, because Portland's kind of more of a bohemian, open-minded type city.
Yeah.
But I was kind of shocked that there wasn't anything already established. So I did it just kind of reach out and have people share their experiences and meet and greet, maybe get together in person once in a while and discuss it.
Yeah, yep. And what got you interested in the topic in the beginning? You had sightings, a number of them, right?
I did. It started when I was 7 years old, and my sister, who was 13 at the time, in Mobile, Alabama, where I grew up. This was probably a week after Hurricane Frederick in 1979, and my sister and I are standing in front of my parents' house, and all of a sudden, in the corner of our eye, you see something coming over the tree line, and it's big, and it just slowly comes above the trees and above, right over our heads, and it's a saucer-shaped craft, just as you expect to see, probably the size of a city block. It had a red glowing dome, and it had blue and yellow lights on the edges, and the yellow lights were almost pill-shaped, like capsule-shaped, and the blue lights were round, and I couldn't tell if the craft was stationary and the lights were spinning around the craft, or if the craft was spinning and the lights were stationary. But it made zero noise whatsoever. And recently, my sister and I were talking about it, and she mentioned a detail that I don't remember. And she said the strangest thing about it was you could see the stars behind it. It was semi-translucent.
I've heard that You've heard this? Of times when people have talked about, you know, the triangle UFOs overhead. They can sort of see, like, a rippling and, like, star, you know, through, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It almost, when you talk about these type of things, it makes you think about maybe interdimensional or what can it possibly be, you know, I mean, and I've said this a number of times on my show, it's probably something we can't even think of is what it really is, you know, can't even, you know, have not thought of yet, most likely. But so... where was this, and was this a daylight sighting, first of all?
No, this was evening. This was probably 8 o'clock at night.
And where was this? What was this in Maine, actually in Maine?
No, this was in Mobile, Alabama.
Oh, okay. You, did you say that already?
I did.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. But I remember going in. I remember rushing in to call my best friend to tell him to look out his window, which, of course, it was gone by then anyway. But the interesting thing is, about 2 years ago, I was talking about it on Facebook with another friend, and one of my sister's friends chimed in, and he says, was this right around Hurricane Frederick when you saw this? And you could have pushed me over with a feather. I said, are you messing with me? He said, no, me and my brother saw it too.
Wow.
And they lived in the neighborhood a few blocks down. Probably half a mile from where we were. He said, yeah, we saw it going over our house heading towards your neighborhood. And we waited up for 2 weeks. We stayed up late after that trying to see it again.
Yeah.
And that's the only other confirmation that I've had of people seeing it.
Yeah.
And even more interesting, I keep every once in a while I'll look online to try to find if there's been a reported sighting back then around that time. And nothing ever came up, but just recently I found that someone reported within that same week in Gulf Shores, Alabama, which is about an hour and a half away from Mobile, seeing in the late afternoon off the coast, seeing a rectangular-shaped craft that had to have been a mile wide within 2 days of my sighting, I believe it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm almost wondering if the two were connected.
Well, I had... a guy that's written a book on triangle UFOs, Dave Marleron, a few weeks ago, and the topic came up about a mixture of types of crafts, and it's been seen a number of times. Well, they'll see a cigar shape along with a disc and along with a triangle, or you know, it really is. The more you dig into this, the more puzzling. It can be. And so, were there other? You had a sighting since you've been in the state of Maine also, right?
I have. We were in West Paris for 10 years, and on clear nights, you could go up to the top of the mountains there and see the outer bands of the Milky Way, you know, the dense star clusters. And so we would go out and just lay on blankets and stare at the sky, and every once in a while, most of the time, it was the twinkling orbs, you know, that would change color from blue to red to white, and they look like stars glancing at them, but when you start to watch them, you'll see them start to move around and to sway, and everybody says it's an optical illusion, but if you line it up to something in the foreground, you know, have a point of focus and line it up to that point of focus, a tree line or a utility line, and you'll see it move independent of that point of reference. Mm-hmm. And we've seen them. I've seen them come down pretty close to where we live, and then take off. And I remember one night, my wife and I were standing out watching one, and she's the skeptical one. She's the Scully to my Mulder, I like to say. And we're watching it, and she says, helicopter. No, no, we would hear it. Plane. No, no, planes don't just sit there and hover. And finally she said, that might be a UFO. And then she says, but you don't see who's driving it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of how it goes with her. But we would see those on numerous occasions. We had a daylight sighting once where it was another saucer-shaped craft. And you couldn't see anything. You couldn't make out any features because all it was a bright orange glowing. It was just a glowing saucer shape, basically, that hovered over a street close to where we were for about 3 minutes and then took off.
Wow. Wow. So there's quite a bit, pardon me, there is quite a bit going on in the state of Maine. I know that I can't remember where we rest in the per capita, but it's fairly high.
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen the charts.
In the states. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why. Yeah. You know, I mean, I grew up in southern Maine and right on the border of New Hampshire during the UFO flap or wave during the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And we were all outside looking, you know, and I saw a weather balloon, that's all. I mean, a real weather balloon. Oh, okay. Across, we're right across from the river from the Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And but there was always weird. The Air Force Base always seemed like there was weird stuff going on there. But it was, as a kid, it's mostly my imagination, probably.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I left out one sighting. I used to work at the airport in Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And one day while we were out on the tarmac, one of my coworkers and I look up. And we see what I can only describe as the escape pod that R2-D2 and C-3PO left the Death Star Destroyer in to land on Tatooine. And it was motion. Well, it just hovered right above the airport and just slowly oscillated.
Hmm.
And it was gray with, it looked like black and white, some type of markings on it. And it just sat there. It was almost like it was observing or collecting some type of data.
Well, you know, I've heard other people talk about that. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine's mother in Russia talked about viewing something. She said it looked like the size of a washing machine, and it was over and just stayed there. And she said she thought she saw it turning, but it was a little far away. Stayed there for hours and hours, and they couldn't get anyone to come check it out.
Mm-hmm.
We hear seagulls outside.
Yeah. We're in Portland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's now we want to talk to Eric. How are you, Eric?
Right here. Yeah. Not used to radio. Yeah.
Just a little bit closer.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Getting over a little health problem, but I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, thank you for making it down.
Absolutely.
Here. And you know Audrey. You two met. Who met who? I mean, how did that all happen?
Yeah. Kind of a strange situation, really. It had to be through Starborn Support.
It had to be through Starborn Support. I really can't remember exactly when we first started talking, but he started coming to the meetings, but he just moved here from Arkansas in September, right?
Yes.
All right, so he came to the conference as well, so through Facebook and then ending up here, which turns out he was actually from the area where we spent most of our lives in Massachusetts, in the Bridgewater Triangle area. So it kind of went in a circle. It's very strange.
Okay. So can you tell us what your whole experience has
been?
Sure,
you got to lead me. I'm not used to radio.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I have never, and I want to repeat that, never had any inclination, any thought about the ridiculousness of the existence of little green men and UFOs. I thought it was insane if anybody, you know, brought up the subject. roll my eyes, walk away, another crazy person. You know, here's the world. We have plenty of them. Unfortunately, that was the case for me. I woke up. I'm an avid sleepwalker. I woke up. That was 2013, July 28th. I believe that was a Sunday morning, around 4 o'clock a.m. I woke up standing literally outside my apartment. I was dressed. I had a blue tank top, black slacks, and a pair of Nike flip-flops, I believe, on. And my left shoulder was facing my door. My right shoulder was facing the dead end of the street where I was looking at some kind of light. I thought right away, I thought it was some kind of construction, something like that, you know, going on. And I think it was measured later on to be about 160 feet away, you know, from where I was standing. There was a full investigation for over a year with what happened. A lot of things did go on. I didn't go, oh, UFO. You know, when you're a sleepwalker, you try to wake up a little bit and go, what is this? And, of course, when you're fully awake, you're trying to rationalize what you're looking at. And it was 160 feet away, 60 feet off the ground, and about 30 feet in diameter was an orange spherical light. As I thought more about it, I realized it didn't reflect off of anything. There were trees there. There was apartments there. There were, you know, the road right there. If you got to look at something and squint, it's going to make a glowing sensation around everything it's around, and it didn't, and that bothered me. So after about 20 minutes of staring at it, I came inside. It was about 4:18 a.m., and I started the coffee pot, and I sat on the couch, turned on the news, and I'm thinking, I'm just trying to rationalize. You know, I'm just trying to get a good bead on what the heck I was looking at. So I went to the door probably 10 times before the sun came up, you know, just, and it was still there. Didn't bob, didn't weave, didn't move, you know, just stationary. And my idea, you know, 6 a.m., sun up, 2 hours. I'm going to drink that full pot of coffee. I'm going to see what that thing is, you know. Sometimes
if I can interrupt you, did you call anyone or?
Oh, no. I mean, why? I was not alarmed or anything. I was just really confused about what I was looking at. There's no way, shape, or form I'm going to jump up and down like a Neanderthal and go, ooh, UFO. I mean, that's to me, that's not the kind of mind I am. You know, I'm not a sci-fi buff, never have been. Not going to throw my imagination into the mix, but, you know, I'm trying to rationalize. And after you do that, like arguing with your wife, you can only do it so much and then sit back and wait for the proof to happen. And I don't mean about UFO. I mean about daily life, you know. You can argue until you're blue in the face. But, you know, once you turn right where she told you to turn and she's right, then you just take it and take it as it comes. So for me, it was just, you know, 6 o'clock will come and then, you know, one of the guesses that I picked or something I didn't even think of will pop up. 6 o'clock, it was gone. So it made me very nervous. You know, people need to rationalize situations, things they see. You know, even a kid, you can see that. You know, mommy, what is that? Daddy, what is that? You know, it's constant when they're at a certain age. I wondered all day. I was pretty much on edge. I went to work. people commented that I was a little shaken. I didn't feel like I was shaken. I was just really deep in thought. You know, just what was that darn thing? Never even got to the point of military or something like this. It was always just trying to figure it out. And then it hit me about 5 hours into it. I had witnessed ball lightning. It's rare. I've read about it. You know, it's really neat. I didn't have a camera witness. I was laughing at myself. Doing the single father thing, you know, I left work, got some groceries, came home. And, yeah, I had a lot of neighbors in the area, you know, dead end street. Long story short, that evening, around 9:30 in the evening, I don't smoke outside, but I do smoke outside, not on the inside. I went out to smoke a cigarette and I was looking up in the area, just laughing at myself. And, there it was, it just blinked on the entire thing, not lights on it. It was the entire thing blanked and went completely out about 15 feet to my right, blinked on. Blink completely out, did a complete circle doing that until it got above my head and then shot off over a cattle field. So at this point, my knees are shaking. I have no idea what I saw, and I was a nervous wreck. But that was an absolute beginning of a full year of the hell that I probably, hopefully, never will repeat again. The third sighting I won't mention, but after that, neighbors started noticing. The object came down as low as 30 feet above my head. It eventually got to the point where people would show up in front of my apartment on a daily basis. wanting to see the UFO and the UFO guy, which I never advertised to do so. But usually when I'd come home, it'd be about 20, 30 people at a time pointing at him. And, you know, if there's people up here, you know, where's your proof? There was a full investigative team that was on it for a full year. I've got proof of military harassment. I've got pictures. I've got videos. You name it, I have it. You name it, you know. Do I feel like I need to ruin my life trying to be a UFO guy and get out there and try to sell a book? No. I am a man. I'm a person. I'm a human being. I'm not a celebrity. I don't care to be. Does this information belong to people who want it? Absolutely. And I'll find a way to do so, but that's not as easy. You know, in the beginning, I was told about this UFO community. Well, I pictured, you know, as naive as I was, like cottages and everybody's mowing their lawns, you know. That turned out to be one big backstabbing, all kinds of crazed lunatic stuff I don't want to even get into right now, you know, because something that amazes, it just happens to a person. And you go to find out stuff and you just get pummeled by these people. So when I heard about ufology, I thought maybe I can get an online class. You know, I was that naive. I didn't know. I just absolutely didn't know.
There's probably a few people out there that would teach you, take your money and teach you.
To this day, Milk Lane was a very short dead-end street to show you how much activity with the helicopters, the military harassment, the whole nine yards turned out to be, you know, everyone on the street, 20 apartments on one side, three trailers on the other side. Most of these people couldn't afford to move. You know, this is just a place before you can get a place type of place. They all moved. I was the last one to move from that apartment complex. And to this day, that happened in 2013. No one has rented anything on that street. It's turned into an urban legend, you know. People talk about it. And, you know, in the South, there's a lot of Baptists there. And, you know, you don't talk about these kinds of things. You know, I hear of kids going out there late at night drinking beers, wanting to see the lights in the sky. But I don't hear word that they ever do. But
is it like all run down and abandoned? Or
no, they just rebuilt them. The owner sold because he couldn't get anything. He couldn't rent them out. He couldn't rent anything out. So he sold them. And they were nice little two-bedroom apartments, you know, not bad at all. Cheap on utilities, cheap on rent. And a new guy from Colorado came in and fixed them up really nice and, you know, kept low rent, you know, just to get people to move in, one-year lease type of deal, but nobody will move back there. The activity that happened, you would think there'd be tanks, there'd be military, there would be something, but it's not like the movies.
Someone wants to know, can you elaborate on the military harassment?
I can. It first started, I'd like to say, you know, I'm not a paranoid person. I don't look over my shoulder every 2 seconds. It has to be, and I've learned that I'm that stupid, it has to be right in my face before I go, okay, that's what this is, you know. And it was the third sighting when I realized that I was dealing with something very intelligent, very scary, and very much not us. You mentioned earlier how hard it could possibly be. Yeah, right? I can't get into that much time.
No.
Helicopter, I can't really mention too many names. I don't want to, but there were several witnesses. But I was standing with a friend. I was looking at an object a couple hundred feet off the ground. They were quiet. They kept coming back. It was almost like a timid deer, you know, just over the trees, backing away, coming closer. The first helicopter, we never even heard it coming. It just came right behind us. The object took off the opposite direction, and it spotlighted us both. I mean, so close and so low to the ground, I had to hold my hat on my head. And you can see this guy's face, you know, with the I don't know why he was wearing sunglasses, but he was wearing sunglasses in the dark flying this helicopter. After that, it was almost a daily routine. I had a neighbor of mine, Debbie. She was a porter that worked at the hotel right down the street from us, and she cleaned out, you know, the sheets and did the rooms and everything. She calls me up one day and says, you know, do you have family in town? Because this guy's got pictures of you and your kids all over his bed, all over the desk, paperwork on you guys. I said, Debbie, go to the office right now and get that man's name. Well, it turns out he's a retired lieutenant colonel that worked for the Pentagon for some time. He had relocated to that area, vacation, I don't know, but he had a lot of information on me. unfortunately, I can't get a whole lot of information on him, even though I know his name. You work for the Pentagon, you're going to have stacks and stacks of paperwork on you. This guy doesn't have much. It did go on from there with several other things, though. But as far as physical contact, no. They won't talk to you. They won't come near you. None of that.
This longtime UFO researcher had sort of been, he was sort of, he has something to sort of reveal recently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get into too much detail other than I heard from him recently and he was being harassed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was harassed. Kathy Martin published a picture of my helicopter.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
it was a black helicopter. Was right over his house in his driveway.
I can't tell him.
Yeah, he drove away because he had to go to drop his brother off or something, and the thing followed him, and he came back and it was over his house again.
Mm-hmm.
He went running he showed me a picture of it, and it had this ball on the front of it. And it was over his house, and he went on, and his router and his computer was going crazy, and he shut everything down.
Well, he got to. Yeah, I guess I will, Audrey. I was over at Audrey's house recently, and I wanted to take a shower, and I went in to take a shower in her spare bathroom. I can't believe you talked me into saying this is all true. I'm not a paid actor, folks. This is actual, you know, people's lives here. I was taking a shower, and, you know, coincidentally, I was very, very, very soaped up. You know, I mean, I was just covered. My hair had the mohawk, the whole night. Don't pretend like you haven't done it. But she has a skylight just above, you know, the shower there. And I hear this huge truck just going right by the house. And I'm going, wow, that must be a big truck. I look up through the skylight, and there's a black helicopter hovering directly over the skylight. I am naked as a jaybird, soaped up like that. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that does happen. And would I
you
ever...
You weren't standing on your head, so...
No, that was like... Yeah, that was like... Yeah, that was like 2 minutes before. Yeah, she ran outside to take a picture. But, I've got plenty of photographic evidence. You know, that's what people want to see, evidence all the time.
It's coming.
And, hopefully I can find a way to get it out. I mean, I've been told by my investigators that this is a substantial amount as far as ufology and everything like that. But how to get it out, not to be, you know, picked on, ridiculed, this and that. You know, that's a hard thing. You know, I've got a family. I got friends. I got people that really don't want to get picked on or anything like that. But at the same time, this information needs to be, you know, it needs to be out there.
Now, when you said... we got just a couple minutes here to the top of the hour. That's why I kept looking at the clock. And we take just a quick little music break. And so when we do that, before we do that, though, God, I totally lost my train of thought, and it's live radio. As from looking around here. Before we do that, can you just say... What organization was researching your case? Was it an organization?
Yes and no. the guy that I found, luckily, very much luckily, he goes by Kentucky Truth Seeker on Facebook, and that's how I found him, was on the STAR team for 25 years for MUFON, and a lot of his team was as well. From what I know, MUFON had a little bit of a falling out years and years ago, and there was a lot of people that left, and he has been doing it on his own, you know, for 40 years, and he has been the best I could imagine. I mean, he wasn't there to go and collect evidence and run out. He would stay there with me, coach me, talk to me, never gave me his ideas or pushed his impressions on me, but just always made sure that I was okay. And I would not be a man sitting here in front of a microphone. I would be, you know, in a padded room somewhere. I could not handle my worldview being torn to pieces. Could not handle it. Take care of two kids and go to work every day. There's just no possible way I could have handled that. And I don't know how some people can handle it. There are people that aren't well-rounded. They don't know how to compartmentalize emotions, and it will destroy you. And people say, you know, I wish I had an experience. You know what? Be careful what you wish for.
That's right. So that's it for this part of the show. If you'd like to listen to the second part of the show, you have to become a subscriber for only a dollar or more per month. And that information is right on our website, podcastufo.com, right on our sidebar. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Alejandro Rojas for helping out in the beginning. And our guests, we had Dan Brew, we had Audrey Starborn, and we had Eric Mitchell. Thanks a lot, everyone. And I also want to thank Peggy Shunning for managing the Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. Next week, we supposedly have a big name coming on. I haven't had confirmation, so I can't really announce it. So it's going to be either a surprise guest that is well-known or another surprise guest to me, because I don't know who else I'm going to have on there. But anyway, thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday. I'll be somewhere in a hotel somewhere, and Alejandro Rojas will not be available. So looking forward to next week, and keep your eyes to the sky.